The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Now more with Bill Meyer.
Good morning, 12 minutes after 6. Join in at 770-563-3770-KMED. Email Bill at BillMyersShow.com. The Facebook.com/BillMyersShow feed is up, and we appreciate you listening. By the way, we had a few problems on the podcast over the last couple of weeks. Those have been repaired. Thank you very much for the people that are letting me know. And things are fine. You can get your podcast sponsored by Clouser Drilling of Southern Oregon, and that is all back. If you have a podcast aggregator, everything's working just fine, okay? And, of course, you can stream the podcast directly out of KMED.com and also listen on KMED.com. Stream it directly. No app needed any longer. Okay. It's Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters will be joining me here in a few minutes. I'm looking forward to talking with him about a whole bunch of stuff, including this push to ban the ability to fix your car as they age. This is something which is working through the European Union right now. And another thing I wanted to talk with him about and get his take on Elaine Chao's sister-in-law, actually, it's Mitch McConnell's sister-in-law, and his wife is Elaine Chao, you know, former transportation secretary, and her sister ended up drowning at the ranch in Texas back in February when she backed her Tesla. Accidentally, she backed her Tesla into a Texas pond on the ranch property. And they tried for ages trying to tow it out, tried to get her out, et cetera, et cetera. The electrical system, of course, immediately failed, and the reinforced windows made it next to impossible to break through for her to either get out or for rescuers to get in. She ended up drowning in it, and this is still under investigation. And heck, she even called. From inside the Tesla, but yet another example where too easy or too difficult to get in also means too difficult to get out, too. Now, that's something that's actually even bothered me about the trend to every vehicle now having electric windows up and down, no handles whatsoever. And I'm sure Eric will have a take on that. We'll kick it around, and a lot of other transportation news coming up, too. State Senator Dennis Linthicum ended up making an announcement yesterday. We'll talk with him after the 7:30 news. He's going to run for Oregon's Secretary of State. I didn't even know that he was investigating this or looking into this. But, you know, he can't run for Senate this year because of Measure 113 and the dim view that voters, well, I should say the dim voters who took a dim view of denial of quorum and the necessity to have that in a representative democracy. But we'll set that aside right now. Diane Linthicum, his wife and also chief of staff, is running to take his place in the state Senate. So we wish her best of luck in the spring primary in May. And then we'll see where that goes. And so she would be able to do that. But there's nothing in Measure 113 that would stop Senator Linthicum from running for a different office. He just couldn't run for re-election. And given the fact that he has, and others, along with State Senator Kim Thatcher, others have sued the Secretary of State, State of Oregon, and also the various counties of Oregon for election problems, all the election hinky with mail-in ballots, and it costs $1 million to take a look at your local ballots these days after an election. Isn't that interesting? We talk about Oregon being transparent. Well, if you're concerned about corruption in the Secretary of State's office, what better way to fight it than to run to be Secretary of State? So, whoo, we'll see where that goes. That's going to be a high lift, though. You know that. Statewide office for a Republican, especially. You know, I'm going to be curious what he's going to say because you know what's going to happen. You know what the television and the newspapers are all going to do. They're going, well, you what? Were you going to walk out of the Secretary of State's office? So we'll see. We'll kick that around with Dennis. Of course, it does. It's a really sad state of affairs, though, when the reporters themselves don't even really understand the whole concept of denying quorum and why quorum was important, an important minority party, right? You know, they don't know too much these days, unfortunately. I swear so often what's happening in the newsrooms is that, you know, they're 12-year-olds just straight out of journalism school, which means they don't really know anything and not a lot of institutional memory. You know, you don't have the days of the Ron Browns from KDRV as an example, you know, who's around here like just forever, right? Forever, and had more memories than just the of what had happened here in Southern Oregon than just the past 2 or 3 months, you know, since they arrived in town with their journalism degree. Oh, well. But anyway, we'll have that. Oh, by the way, I'm also interested. Have you noticed that in all the coverage, I'm talking about all the television coverage, all the newspaper coverage of the Jackson County for All, the charter changes, I noticed that they never take note of it being backed by failed county commissioner candidates from the Democratic Party. Don't you find that interesting? Isn't that an interesting omission that you would think that that more of the televisions and newspaper articles would be interested in noting? It's true. It's true. You know what's going on. That is certainly interesting. Oh, okay. So Denise Krause, you were really concerned about the high cost of county commissioners in Jackson County. When you ran for Jackson County last time around, you didn't make any mention of that. You were perfectly happy with the salary and benefit package and everything that was done right then. What changed between then and now, other than the fact that you lost? There's an interesting sin of omission. I don't know if it's a sin. Maybe we shouldn't put a moral thing out of it, but the lie of omission, that there is very little mention of that in all the conversations about Jackson County for All. Just saying. We'll just leave it at that. You know where I'm coming from on these particular situations. All right. Another interesting story, this one in the Grants Pass Daily Courier that broke yesterday. Grants Pass mayor to veto charitable services ordinance. Grants Pass mayor Sarah Bristol announced this morning, this was yesterday, that she is vetoing a new city ordinance that would have regulated individuals and groups that give out food, clothes, and other supplies and homeless people in city parks. Now, you know why the city council passed this 5-3. This was about reining in the homeless services rackets such as Max's Mission and Stab and Wagon, the ones that take your tax dollars and then essentially invade our parks here in Southwest Oregon and enable drug addiction and make it oh, poor dear, really sorry that you're on fentanyl here. Here's a box of free needles, you know, that kind of thing. And then people drink and drug themselves into oblivion, fight, set their tents on fire, shoot each other. You know, we've had these things happen, all this. And city councils, of course, are rather concerned about this, would like to get some control. And I'm surprised that Mayor Sarah Bristol would go in this direction. Now, the city council, this according to the Vicki Aldo story, Grants Pass City Council majority voted 5-3 to adopt new regulations. It would require these service providers to register with the city, pay a one-time $25 application fee, and renew their registration every 4 months. I'm vetoing the humanitarian services ordinance because it would add an unnecessary layer of bureaucracy and red tape in city parks, Bristol said in a statement. When is a Democrat really concerned about bureaucracy? Well, I guess she is in this case. All right. She said the ordinance could open the door to potential litigation against the city. All right. Do we do everything? Do we run everything that might help us protect our parks and get some control over our city, Mayor Bristol? Do we run everything through we might be sued by a liberal legal racket group? Is that the determining factor of everything? Someone may sue? Is there no ability for anything to be regulated in the homeless racket world because of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals? I mean, is that where we're going, which nothing can be done? Absolutely nothing can be done? Now, Vicki does add in the story that regulating charitable activities can be legally tricky since the First Amendment protects some activities as free speech. But cities are allowed to regulate activities, and she got that right. City of Brookings was sued in 2022 by St. Timothy's Episcopal Church after its city council adopted an ordinance requiring a permit to serve meals in a residential zone. The ordinance also restricts that charitable meals to only 2 days a week. A ruling in that case is pending. Yeah, I know. You could sit there and hide behind the religious exemption, you know, or, you know, protection of free speech. But there's a big difference to enabling homeless and making it easy and comfortable to be a derelict in town. And especially doing it on public property and taking away the peace and the safety and the safe use of our parks for people who, you know, frankly, should be trying to get clean. But anyway, this is where we find it right now. And so the mayor says she's going to veto this. I'm just kind of surprised that should we go and use this tone. Does it set the right tone, I guess, is what I'm going to ask. I have a question about that. I'm happy to take your calls on that this morning. And is the mayor right? Maybe the mayor is right. Maybe we should just always be just terrified that there may be a lawsuit. Some liberal lawyer somewhere may file a lawsuit, and then we should cower in fear and not fight. I guess maybe that's the message that's coming. Just lay down. Lay down. We've recriminalized Measure 113. We're sending even more money into the nonprofit rackets, including all care, you know, for the CCO, because they're going to be administering the deflection program, what used to be called diversion. And the nonprofit in the hospital systems and the drug addiction rackets, they will continue to grow larger and larger and eat more of your taxes. But that's okay. We wouldn't want to fight Stabbing Wagon. Oh, no, no, because Melissa Jones may say something mean and hire a lawyer. I guess that is. So, in other words, we should have Melissa Jones then be, mayor of Medford and Grants Pass and be the controlling authority at everything involving the homeless. Talk to Melissa first. All right, Melissa. By the way, I'm just picking on Melissa because she's the biggest target here, the one that people think about the most. But there's a lot of other ones besides Stabbing Wagon, Max's Mission, and others, too. It's a 6:23 at KMED, KCMD. Sometimes being a member of the government, an elected official, means that you have to be willing to fight and not just cower in fear at the potential of litigation. Just saying. But then I wasn't elected mayor, so what do I know? If you have any thoughts, let me know. 770-5633. You're on the Bill Myers Show at KMED and KCMD.
If your tools and equipment are rolling around in your pickup bed and trailer, Two Dogs Fabricating will get you organized with racks, hooks, hangers, baskets, and sleeves. Two Dogs provides whatever you need to be efficient and ready when you roll up on a job site. And if you're looking for a unique work bed or trailer, sketch it on a napkin and bring it in. Just a little direction and you'll say, "That's exactly what I was thinking." Two Dogs Fabricating, a working man's best friend. Beside your dog, of course. On Bryan Way, off Sage in Medford, and at twodogsfab.com.
You've heard us say it for years. The pests, mold, and allergens under your home impact the air you breathe inside your home. That's where Terra Firma Foundation Systems comes in. Dark and damp areas are breeding grounds for mold and mildew. Warming spring temps add humidity, making your crawl space a greenhouse. Stop the cycle. Terra Firma can turn your crawl space into a clean, dry, protected space. Visit goterrafirma.com to schedule your free evaluation today. CCB 173-547. That's goterrafirma.com.
The tax laws have changed. Do you understand them? If you need a licensed tax professional to prepare your income tax return, then call Pat Hurley at 774-1040. 774-1040. Wow, what an easy number.
Are you adventure ready? Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is your source for overlanding, off-road, and outdoor lifestyle products, featuring quality options for rooftop tents, racks, bumpers, winches, and recovery gear, LED lighting, dual battery systems, onboard compressors, cargo cases, coolers, and refrigerators. They also offer camp stoves, scuttles, fire pits, tables, and chairs, so you're prepared once you've reached your destination. Stop by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, your department of adventure.
An intelligent solution is shared with others. This is Randall at Advanced Air. Are you looking for a heating contractor to service your furnace or heat pump? Most of Advanced Air's work comes from clients referring us to their friends and family after a repair. Advanced Air strives to provide excellent service and maintain our 5-star rating on Google, Facebook, and BBB. As a Bryant Factory dealer, Advanced Air is grateful for loyal customers. Your referral is the greatest compliment on a job well done. Advanced Air and Bryant do whatever it takes to deliver best-in-class home comfort.
Make the intelligent choice. Visit myadvancedair.com.
Hi, this is Lisa, the Hughes Lumber Girl, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
6:26, Eric Peters will join me here in a few minutes for Wheels Up Wednesday. Kind of going over some of the other headlines. By the way, biggest national headline is that former President Trump ended up clinching his Republican nomination with the Washington state primary. So that has been done. And with President Biden, resident Biden ends up being the presumptive. Well, he's going to be the Democratic nominee, too, assuming that he's able to make it through the contentious, not the primary, but the DNC convention. We'll see about that. I have a feeling that there may be some machinations done, but he ended up winning the Georgia primary. So it is a repeat of the 2020 election, this time with JFK, or with RFK, rather. RFK in the story. So RFK talking about either having Jesse Ventura, former Minnesota governor and, of course, a wrestler, and the pro football player being talked about as vice presidential picks. Very interesting. Jesse Ventura. Yeah, I'm not a fan, but then at that, I'm not really a fan of RFK either. I'm just not. RFK Jr., but anyway, we'll just see. A little bit later on in the show, I'll actually explain one of the big reasons why I really have a problem with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Okay, really do. And I'll share that. It has to do with an interview he did a month or two ago that kind of sank out of sight. And it was his comment, kind of a smear against boomers. And I was really disappointed to hear him talk about that. But I'll share that in a little while, too. All right. I was talking a couple of minutes ago, shared the story that Daily Courier broke this morning about how Mayor Bristol of Grants Pass is going to veto the homeless services ordinance that the city council passed last week, 5-3. They're trying to rein in the homelessness services rackets that have been, essentially, one of the challenges we face in Oregon is that we're feeding the bears everywhere you go. We feed the bears, kind of like the national park equivalent. We feed the bears, and then we wonder why more homeless bears show up. You know, that kind of thing. And she's going to veto this, and so where it goes with the council, I don't know, but it's an interesting story. And, of course, a lot of this due to fentanyl. And the other fentanyl story of note here in Southwest Oregon continues to, you remember a few weeks ago when we first started talking about the Asante nurse accused of sucking the fentanyl out of the medical bags and then replacing it with tap water, leading to the death of several patients? Now, the Rogue Valley Times reporting this morning that it's not just bad, it's getting worse. And I was wondering back then, because my sources were telling me that it was much, much worse than what was being portrayed even a few weeks ago when that story first broke out of Kobe. The headline this morning on Rogue Valley Times: law firms, Asante has contacted new round of alleged drug diversion victims. They're still using that nice little PC language, drug diversion. In other words, nurse drug theft is really what this is. The nurse drug theft victims, and replacing it with tap water. And, of course, they end up getting sepsis. It's just horrible, horrible what was done to these people. But we have law firms that are now talking about 65 to 70 potential victims over the last few years here in Southwest Oregon. 65 to 70 potential cases, including individuals who developed really bad infections and survived, as well as family members of patients who developed infections and didn't survive. At least a dozen involved individuals contacted by Asante, it says in the story, either last week or in November and December. And one of the attorneys involved said it's been retained by clients who had reached out to Asante with suspicions but were initially told that they or their loved ones were not victims. And now Asante's reversing course and starting to contact some of these people they told them originally that they didn't think was a problem. Just wanted to keep you in the room there. Rogue Valley Times, good story in today's edition. 6:31, and you're on KMED, KCMD. We hit the open road. Eric Peters on the way in seconds.
At Freddy's Diner, you may be occasionally surprised.
I guess I'll look at the menu, but I've got this thing practically memorized. Wait, what's this? An 8-ounce New York steak? Beer-battered salmon? Salmon Diablo?
Welcome to Freddy's. Are you ready to order?
I'm going to need a few more minutes.
He's got plenty of time to decide. Freddy's is open 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day for lunch and dinner. Freddy's Diner on Main in Old Town Eagle Point.
News sponsored by Caveman Heating and Air. It's the climate and we control it. Call Caveman Heating and Air at 541-476-0009 or cavemanheating.com.
Good morning. I'm Natalie Cerna with your NBC5 Morning News Update. The Southern Oregon Historical Society is one step closer to opening a downtown event center thanks to new funding from the Oregon Legislature. During the 2024 legislative session, the legislature awarded a $500,000 grant to SOHS to go toward development of a new event center. The event center would be created in the old JCPenney building near the Criterion. SOHS Executive Director Ron Kramer says this is a large step towards reaching their funding goal for the space. Kramer says with this funding, they are just a few $100,000 short of the nearly $1.2 million needed to create this center. And SOU was awarded funding for two of its top three priorities in the short legislative session. SOU will get $666,000 to build a master's degree for a social work program. It will also receive $6 million to complete an ongoing upgrade to the Central Hall building. The university says the funding will pay for phase four of the project. This includes interior design and finishing up the second floor, landscape renovations, a solar installation on the roof, charging stations, and much more. SOU says phase four of the project will kick off either this summer or fall. That's a look at your morning headlines. For NBC5 News, I'm Natalie Cerna, and have a great Wednesday.
When you hire a contractor, the last worry you should have is, are they capable enough to handle the job? A well drilling contractor is no different, especially with tough drilling conditions Southern Oregon can encompass. Clouser Drilling invests in capable machinery, tooling, and personnel equipped to handle these conditions. They operate four modern rotary drill rigs with capabilities from air rotary, mud rotary, and drill and drive casing advancement systems. Combine this with over 50 years and thousands of wells drilled, and worry no more. Contact Clouser Drilling or visit clouserdrilling.com.
Do you have an electrical checklist at your house that needs to be completed? Call Completed Electric Plus. Need a dimmer switch installed? Completed. Fan installation? Completed. Breaker problem? Completed. New plug by your favorite chair? Completed. Electrical jobs around the house get completed quickly, expertly, and affordably with licensed techs from Completed Electric Plus. Specializing in residential electric jobs, call Completed Electric Plus and check those jobs off your list. Visit them at CompletedElectricPlus.com.
As the Montana roofing crews travel around Southern Oregon, they like to keep things interesting.
You know, we've been doing so many roofs around the valley, there's not many areas where we don't see our past work.
Ooh, like that one.
Yep, the whole metal package. Roof, siding, flashing, gutters.
Tile job.
Oh yeah, that's a beauty. Luxury home on the hill with tile and copper accents.
Shake.
That traditional barn looks great with that fading shake roof. That one was tricky.
I'm up like three zip.
Oh wait, I didn't know this was a competition. Composite.
Jinx. Maybe we should just Rochambeau for that one.
Rochambeau? I'm driving. A tie goes to the driver.
Okay, well, I'll give you that one. Metal, you're kidding. Destroyed. 4-1.
Oh, this isn't fair. I got to keep my eyes on the road, and I can't look around and see what else is going on.
While the Fontana Roofing Crew has fun on the way, they're all business when they arrive at your job site. Visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD, and this is the Bill Meyer Show.
Junior Brown, American Treasure, his wonderful classic, Highway Patrol. You better be driving slow. Well, Eric Peters never does that, but that's why we love him. Eric Peters, automotive journalist at epautos.com. Eric, welcome back. Wheels Up Wednesday. Great to have you on. And you had one of your readers that wrote into you last week and wrote a story, and I caught that the other day, and I just about wet myself laughing with it. And it had to do with what we were talking about on last Wheels Up Wednesday, and that has to do with all of the sound that the automakers are trying to put in to replace the V8s and the actual organic sounds that real mechanical things make. And you know, they're just kind of like putting a PA system. You know, here's the sound of the V8 that's no longer with it now that you have a device instead of a car. But anyway. Yep.
Oh, I'm so jealous of this. I just wish that I had thought of it and could have taken credit for it. But nonetheless, I used it because it was just that brilliant. We're having these ersatz sounds of combustion being piped out of electronic devices like the electric charger that's going to be coming out in a couple of months. And this reader said, well, why don't we, while we're at it, go ahead and have the sound of gas pumping at these fast chargers so people can sit there and listen to, ding, ding,
ding. and also listen for the ka-chunk, right, when it's when it's done. Okay.
Yep.
Or if you try to overcharge your electric battery, then it'll go ka-chunk really quick, just like the regular gas pumps do when you try to fill up too much. I love it.
Of course, it might get old after sitting there and listening to it for 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah, listening to the ding for that would be rather tiresome. There is one thing I did want to ask you about. I don't know if you know this or not, but maybe your sources could let you know more about it. I've noticed when I was over in parking lots lately that the hybrid or the electric vehicles, they do have sound coming out of them now, or at least most of them, the newer ones seem to. And I'm just noticing that the Toyota seems to have a weird sound. It almost sounds like a Star Trek outer space kind of whine. What is that? Do we know? Was there?
Yes. It's a safety system, and I'm pretty sure it's a federal mandate now. And the reason for it is that when the hybrids first came out, at low speeds, as when they're backing up out of a parking spot, they're not making any noise, and people are so buried in their cell phones and not paying attention that some people got bumped into by cars. So they have put that little noisemaker in there just to give it some noise so that people will notice, hey, there's a car backing up. Maybe I should get out of its way.
Has anyone done tests on whether that sound actually makes sense? Because I didn't realize it was coming from a vehicle at first, because it doesn't sound like a vehicle. The sound that they use is kind of like this drone, this electronic drone.
Yeah.
Drone of sorts?
Yeah, not to my knowledge. I guess the assumption is, well, there's a sound, and so maybe that'll cause people to look up, but I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah. If nothing else, they should be putting the sound of the V8.
But to their credit, they didn't do that. They're not trying to pull one over on you, which is, in my opinion, that's what they're doing with these fake engine sounds out of the charger. Look, the thing doesn't have an engine, so please spare me. If you're going to sell an EV, it's an EV. It doesn't have an engine. So stop trying to pretend that it has one.
Yeah, well, a lot of the economy and a lot of the world right now is pretend. A lot of the leadership is pretend, too. So perhaps it's just appropriate that everything's a simulacrum, I guess. Hey, I just mentioned to you briefly, I know you haven't kept up on this story, but don't you find it interesting how we're getting to the point where we no longer have mechanical backups to all the electrical stuff we're supposed to have? And I'm thinking about Elaine Chao's sister, who ended up dying a little over a month ago when she backed her Tesla. They were having this party, and I don't know, maybe she was drinking a little bit, I don't know. But she backed her Tesla, her expensive Tesla, into this ranch pond. And they couldn't tow it out no matter what they did. They weren't able to get the tow trucks out there in time. They couldn't break the windows because the windows were reinforced. And I guess, is that something which is new and exclusive to Tesla? But it was so impenetrable that they couldn't get to her. They couldn't get the car out. They couldn't get her out, even though there were people trying to do it. And she made phone calls from it. I mean, it's just horrible, really. It was impenetrable to the to people trying to get in, but of course the water got in and she drowned.
Well, I find it telling in that once again we have an example of this seeming dissonance in that when something is politically favored, it's granted an exemption from the eye of Sauron. Any other car, when they find some minuscule pretext for hurling forth a new fatwa to if it saves even one life, they'll do it. But when it comes to these electric cars and some of the problems that they've got, and this is an example of it, it's no big deal. Apparently, it doesn't matter whether somebody drowns to death in the car because the electric activated door locks get fritzed out because the car backed up into the water.
And you can't roll the window down either. And, of course, you can almost say that about practically every car and truck made now. I mean, are there any vehicles that have crank windows left, or are they all electric?
I don't think so. I was thinking about that the other day. I don't think there is a single new vehicle that you can buy that still has manual roll-up windows.
And even the ones that I have, 14, 15-year-old cars, they're all electric, too. And it's something I never really gave much thought to. But, yeah, you end up getting into a vehicle. I can lift the lock button on my car. That's no problem. I don't need electricity to do that. But if I couldn't get the car open, I'd have to break a window.
And there is something. There's a specific difference, though, with Teslas in that they don't have the typical mechanical interior door pull. You know, so in a normal car, you'll pull that latch, right, to open the door. Theirs are like touch button, exterior and interior, to open the thing. And if that electronic system isn't working, then you don't have any mechanical means of being able to open up the door.
Isn't that something that if the federal government was truly looking out for our safety, you know, that kind of thing, that they would remedy, that would seem to be a reasonable regulation about making sure that you could get out in an emergency?
In my opinion, in fact, I think it's entirely reasonable that EVs be not allowed on the road right now as a class because of the inherent problem of the fires associated with lithium-ion batteries, which is significant.
You know, I didn't hear about them saying that car catching on fire. I know that a lot of times when these vehicles get flooded out, the batteries go daisies up real quick and catch on fire, I heard. But I guess not.
Yeah, well,
in this
I don't
case.
Know the details of it. Whether the car was immersed completely, there's a vent in the battery case that the water can get into, and if it gets into that and penetrates through it, eventually that water, particularly if it's saline, if it's salty water, that's the big problem.
Yeah,
will cause the battery to catch on fire.
All right, Eric Peters with me, automotive journalist at epautos.com. Questions, comments on vehicles, anything you want answered. He's the guy to talk to. My number is 770-5633. Just wanted to make sure and note that. Another story which intrigues me today is the Smart Driver app. All right. I'm glad we don't have dumb driver apps. We've got plenty of those already. But what is the story Smart Driver detail?
Well, let's start by the way they frame this. You know, they always try to gaslight you and convey the opposite of what the thing is. So smart means you're pretty dumb, in my opinion. And what this specifically refers to is cars that narc you out to data collection companies like LexisNexis, which then in turn sell the data about how you drive to your insurance company, which then proceeds to jack up your rates. Now, mind you, some people might say, oh, but safety. Well, these are people who've never hit anybody. There's no claim that's been filed against them. They haven't even gotten a ticket, a real ticket, but from a cop. It's just that the car recorded that they went faster than the speed limit, or they accelerated to, and they use the word aggressively, and then that becomes the pretext for jacking up your rates. And there's this big New York Times story that dove into this and how people are just being essentially tricked into it. You know, GM says, oh, well, it's optional. You have to enroll. Of course, people don't realize that when they sign the paperwork. And even if they opt out, they're still opting in because that technology is in the car, period. And if you believe that GM is shutting that stuff off just because you asked them to, I've got a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn.
Is there any evidence that General Motors, with the smart driver information being collected, is there any evidence that this could be subpoenaed and whether or not you enrolled in smart driver or not, your car could essentially testify against you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I linked to the New York Times article that gets into that. Somebody filed a Freedom of Information request to find out exactly what was going on, and it turned out they got like a couple hundred pages of report that detailed where their actual individual driving events, like when they, on what date and what time they were driving from A to B, and everything else that you can imagine. All of that is collected by the car, and then it goes out to these data aggregators like LexisNexis, and then that gets turned around and gets marketed and sold. So you've become the product, ironically. You know, you buy the car, but then the car is selling you.
How long have they had this particular deep gathering and storing of data on these cars, do you know?
At least several years. You got to go back to the advent of connectivity. In fact, General Motors has had connectivity in a primitive way since the 90s when OnStar made its debut. That's essentially what we're talking about here. Now, it's not just General Motors, to be fair. Pretty much all of the car manufacturers now have this technology, and I'd say that anything that was made within the last 5 or 6 years has this type of system in it.
Can this kind of data collection and transmission be disabled? And I'm not talking about disabling by just unenrolling your phone out of the Smart Driver app or something like that. I'm talking about actually stopping the collection and the transmission of the car itself of this data.
Not to my knowledge. And the creepy thing is, again, you don't have the choice to not have it put in your vehicle. Just like when you buy a smartphone, it's got these apps and features that you really have no control over. If the thing decides to update itself while you're sleeping, it's going to update itself. And you don't have any say in the matter. It's just that's part and parcel of it. And there's not general awareness on the part of the buying public that they're buying into this thing.
Is SmartDriver, you say there's an equivalent with the other manufacturers. Does it have a certain name to look for? Do you know what the different names are of these?
Well, I mean, they'll call it concierge or connectivity. The various manufacturers have different terms that they use, and many of these terms are just really oily. I really chafe at being told about smart this and smart that, like a smart meter, a smartphone, by which, you know, it's a contemptuous term. It means you're stupid. It means you don't mind being spied on.
Yeah.
Mind and being parented. Just like, you know, they talk about pro backup assist. That's for people who are too incompetent to back up a car. They need pro backup assist.
Although, to be fair, I have to tell you, the federal regulations that have turned all of the behinds, the rear end on cars, into these massive, bulbous, tiny windowed situations, and they all did that because of safety, right? You've talked to us about that
did.
Before.
I know, but it's obnoxious to call it pro, in my opinion. You know, it's just this. It's this. R.M. Terrell, the editor of the American Spectator, had a great term for it that he began using a long time ago. He called it the Kultur smog, and what he meant by that was the way these terms, these weasel words, have just kind of enmeshed themselves into general currency, and so that even people who oppose this stuff end up using it. Another good example is they talked about vaccine hesitancy, as if you were some kind of imbecile, some kind of dolt, you know, who just wasn't going to do the right thing.
Well, the default position is that you would just take every vaccine that was offered and not even question anything, right?
Here's another one. Range anxiety, as if you're just a timorous, quaking little, you know, little ferret, as opposed to, you know what, I don't want to sit at a fast charger for an hour.
In fact, you have an article there on EP now, charging anxiety about that. That is a real issue, though. I've talked to many people. In fact, I had we had that listener that called in from California last week, that talked about the insane difficulty of traveling coast to coast and, you know, and going in the electric charging network and trying to find something at a reasonable rate and reasonably close to where he was at that time.
Yes, these are reasonable, rational objections and questions that are being framed and portrayed as moral defectiveness, as ignorance. Just as stick in the mudness, all of that kind of stuff. You know, it's of a piece with shaming people who don't believe that a man who dresses like a woman is in fact a woman. That means you're transphobic, meaning you're afraid and, you know, you're fearful. You just want to accept the truth.
It's not that you're choosing not to buy a ticket to his crazy circus, right? I know.
Well put. That's exactly right.
Eric Peters, automotive journalist, epautos.com. Eric, when we return, I want to talk about another one of your great pieces that people have to check out, and it has to do with the fix is in, the fix as in fixing your vehicle, and we're wondering if that is going to be something we'll be looking at here in the United States. Coming up, 770-5633, Wheels Up Wednesday.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMET and 99.3 KCMD.
Back with Eric Peters, automotive journalist at epautos.com. Eric, I want to share a story about the repairing of a vehicle. I have a relative who a few days ago got into a minor accident and ended up going off the road, did some damage to her Chrysler Pacifica minivan. And it's about 5 years old, It was in really good shape. And the damage was pretty minor. You know, there's a couple of dented body panels. The frame wasn't whacked or anything like that. Nothing like that. And it was the most interesting experience after going to repair shops, because the insurance company just totaled the vehicle, and yet it is a perfectly repairable van. I mean, it's just the tow truck driver was talking about, oh yeah, there's not much damage to this, and then the cops are looking at this, oh yeah, this is not bad, this is not going to be all that hard to fix at all, and the insurance company just went and just said, nope, we're just going to total the whole thing. There's a lot of money, you know, to do this. And do you know what's driving this? I'm hearing rumors that there was talk about new regulations that you have to fix so many things, more than what happened necessarily in the crash, that it ends up looking like it's more expensive to repair the car than it might be worth. But it just didn't make sense. And we're wondering why our insurance rates are soaring at the same time, too. And have you been hearing anything like that, you know, going on?
Not about the regulations in this country per se, but I have been hearing about increased repair costs. And I know I have some personal anecdotes. A neighbor lady came over, showed me her Subaru Outback, and it had a crinkle in the driver's side door. Now, ordinarily, that's a pretty easy fix.
Yeah.
He took it to the body shop. They wanted $2,300.
$2,300.
It's no longer, it's no longer a simple matter of putting a new skin on the door. They have to take, apparently, they have to replace the whole thing. And now that everything's got computers and body control modules and all this and that, it winds up being preposterously expensive to do minor repairs. And that's one of the drivers for the exorbitant insurance costs that we're seeing. And now it's going to be compounded by things like smart driver.
Uh-huh, yeah. I was just wondering because it just didn't make sense. It didn't make sense to my sister-in-law, and it doesn't seem to make sense to anybody in the system right now. And I know that repair costs have gotten up, but even totaled, the van was worth in replacement costs like $35,000 or something like that, if I recall correctly. And I know darn well there wasn't $35,000 worth of repairs needed for that.
No, probably not even $10,000. It was probably significantly less than that. But it doesn't seem to matter. And this is becoming a generic problem. Another example is the widespread use of aluminum now for exterior body panels. The current F-150, we're not talking about the battery powered device, though. I think it has the same aluminum body. Aluminum is much more difficult to work than steel, and body shops have to have a separate clean room to deal with aluminum welding or aluminum fabrication because of contamination issues. So, that makes fixing that particular vehicle a lot more expensive. And you've got, in some cases, headlights on cars that cost $300 for a freaking headlight.
Yeah, well, don't even get – now, are you talking about, the entire assembly where you have the lens and all that other stuff?
Yeah.
$300-$400?
You smack up the front end of the car. The front end of the car is essentially made of plastic, so you've got two $300 plastic headlight assemblies. You've got that plastic front fascia, the grill, and all of that, and all of a sudden you're looking at $5,000 worth of damage for something that in the past would have been, the bumper's pushed in a little bit, let's pull it out, shine it up with some chrome polish, and you're on your way.
So the complexity of the modern car is what is driving a lot of this, from what I'm hearing. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, it just didn't make sense. I'm scratching my head because everybody else involved in the entire system with my sister-in-law's van, they're going, hey, there's no problem with this. And then they total it. And the problem is that when you total everything like that, that has to drive the cost of insuring everybody else for collision way high. It has to have some role in that, wouldn't you think?
Oh, without doubt. Again, a compounding problem. The average price paid for a new car last year was close to $50,000. So, you've got the premium that is based on the replacement value of a $50,000 vehicle. So you throw away a $50,000 vehicle and you have to cut a check for, even if it's been depreciated a little bit, let's say, okay, it's depreciated 10 or 15%, you're still writing a check for $35,000-ish.
All right. 655.
Somebody's got to pay for that.
Yeah, the money has to come from someplace. Now, back on the smart car and the insurance issue and everything else we were talking about, that smart driver app that you were talking about, is that smart driver app that you were discussing that will report also plugged into the insurance companies? Because I know that my insurance agent was talking to me the other day and said, because I'm going to be up for renewal pretty soon and I'm looking for a big boost in my cost for my insurance. Mm-hmm. No accidents, no tickets, no nothing, right? That kind of thing. But that doesn't matter. And he says, well, you could save more money if you went with Flo, like Progressive, and he's right, and they'll do that. But even though I'm not a crazy driver, I don't like the idea of my dongle communicating everything I do to my insurance agent at all times. That's all.
Well,
insurance company.
Wrong. It's almost impossible to drive in a way that would get you that so-called discount.
Really? Tell me more about that, please. Okay.
Well, for example, they will consider practically any incident of speeding, which, again, it's another one of these gaslighting terms. Oh, you drove faster than the speed limit. Never mind that it's an underposted speed limit. Never mind that the flow of traffic, all of the cars on the road are driving 5 or 10 miles an hour above the speed limit. And so if you drive the speed limit, you're going to get run over. And if you pull out, you're trying to merge with traffic and you accelerate too aggressively, or a kid runs out in front of your car and you brake too aggressively, what are you supposed to do? All of these things will then be used to characterize you as an unsafe or aggressive driver.
When it comes right down to it, you were being perfectly reasonable given the conditions you were dealt.
Yeah, and this is why, I believe in the harm cause standard. I think if you've got a person who has never had a wreck, doesn't have any claims filed against them for years, that's a pretty reasonable way to characterize that person as a competent and safe driver.
Well, maybe
not
what it is,
is there
a possibility that the insurance companies suck you in with a discount at first for putting the dongle in, and then you find out very quickly that there's really no discount?
Sure, because, again, they're being dishonest about it. They're trying to, you know, most people at will take things at face value. Well, you know, I'm a reasonable, safe driver. I don't drive recklessly. I don't drive a whole lot faster than the speed limit. They just assume reasonably that, you know, hey, I'm the kind of person that should get a discount, and then they find out differently.
Interesting. Eric Peters with me, epautos.com. We're talking cars, transportation. Let me go to the phones. We'll just hit line two. You're on. Who's this? Welcome.
Yeah, Selma, Dave.
Hey, Dave. Question or comment for Dave, Eric. Go ahead.
Yeah, on top of the fact that 40% of the currency in circulation has been created in the past 2 years, driving up costs for everything. Here's another thing I wanted to ask him about, the price increase on repairing cars and selling cars. So I watch the financial channels pretty religiously, and it turns out Ford is losing $66,000 per vehicle and lost $4.5 billion last year, as well as Rivian, another electronic car company, lost $3.5 billion. They're all losing money. Are they they must be dividing that cost amongst other vehicles that they sell, gas powered vehicles, and that's causing those vehicles to be more expensive.
So you agree with him on that? Okay.
Yeah, well, a good way to understand this is if you looked at the prices of big trucks and SUVs, particularly those with V8s, you may have noticed that they are now becoming almost exotically priced vehicles. They typically start around $50,000, and you can pay $100,000 for something like a Cadillac Escalade, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these, the reason why is because, you know, they're inflating the cost of those vehicles to compensate for the losses of the compliance cars, and EVs are compliance cars. They have to manufacture these or have to put them out there in order to satisfy the federal regulations. But, you know, they at the same time want to provide things that people are actually interested in buying. And so those are the ones that the prices are going through the roof on.
So the bloom is off the EV rose. Does this mean then that we're going to see more cars and vehicles that people actually want in the near future, the next year or two? Or are we?
Well, it depends on how defiant the car companies get, you know, and I hope that they're going to start to get defiant about it. The problem is they're going to have to do that because the regs are the regs. You may have seen that cringeworthy commercial that Dodge put out starring Tim Kuniskis, who's the head of Dodge. In which he admits, he says, you know, the regulations are such that they prevent us from making engines anymore. He said that almost verbatim. But, you know, we're going to try to offer you something, you know, that's still exciting and perform. And then he goes on to talk about how wonderful this electric charger is.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the reality. It's becoming effectively impossible for these manufacturers to offer engines at all.
Let me go to line three. You're on with Eric Peters. Hi, who's this?
Good morning, Keith, out of Cave Junction.
Hi, Keith.
I have a question that you guys brought up regarding insurance and the wisdom of full coverage on a 2004 Forester, which is in great shape, runs good. It'll give me lots of mileage, but I'm spending a boatload of money on full coverage. What you guys are talking about makes me think it would be wiser to just go back to liability. Do you have an opinion?
Yeah, I do. I think that you'd be best served by getting the least expensive liability-only policy that you can get. Take the money that you save and put it in a cookie jar for.
Now, you know something? That is an interesting distinction. That's a good idea. So go with the liability coverage because he's got a 20-year-old Forester,
mm-hmm.
right? With that.
Yeah, they'll total that thing. It doesn't matter what condition it is.
Yeah,
if he gets into a fender bender, they're going to total it.
Yeah, they'll total it instantly and probably write him a check for a fraction of what it would really take to replace it, right? So take the $50 a month or whatever that coverage is costing you per month, tuck that away for repairs.
Yep.
Right?
Exactly.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for the call there, Keith and CJ. And finally, before we take off, great article. I think this is one of the best articles that I've read from you recently here. They're all good, but the fix is in, and this has to do with, and this is where we have to be defensive and aggressive in defending our ability to repair our vehicles, because it is now out in the open that the European Union is going to make it next to impossible to repair non-compliant vehicles or the politically incorrect vehicles over time, right?
Yeah, this is kind of the other shoe that's dropped over there. And people might say, well, it's in Europe. What do I care? Well, Europe is kind of the beta testing ground for what inevitably comes over here. And in the dilemma that these control freaks who are pushing the EVs are facing is that people aren't buying them. So how to deal with that? Well, the way to deal with that is to get rid of the alternatives to them. And the solution that they came up with in the EU is to characterize any vehicle that's 15 years or older as essentially scrap that's not worth repairing.
And for me, a 15-year-old vehicle is a daily driver, for crying out loud.
Correct.
Yeah?
So if it needs a major repair, like let's say it needs a transmission or even potentially a brake job, that's one of the things that they include in the criteria, you will not be able to do that legally. And, of course, they're probably going to do things like try to make it illegal to sell parts over the counter, just as they did with Freon. You might remember you used to be able to go to any parts store and buy a can of Freon and charge up your AC system yourself. Now you have to be a government-approved certified technician in order to be able to buy Freon.
Now we're speaking about the actual old Freon because you have to evacuate it, all the regs that are around it. Interesting point. It's called The Fix Is In. Read it on epautos.com. And it would seem to me that the automotive repair business and the car parts stores would be rising up and going nuts if this were to come to the United States. I don't think they'd be willing to go quietly in the night. Do you?
You bring up a really good point. I was having a conversation the other day with a friend of mine who's affiliated with the National Motorist Association, and we were talking about this and about the importance of conveying to the OEMs, meaning the car manufacturers, the car unions, everybody that's involved in the car industry, that they are facing an existential threat at this point. That it's no longer about, oh, well, you know, they're going to have this new regulation, and it's going to cost this, it's going to cost that. They're out to get us out of our cars, period, and understand that and act accordingly.
Eric Peters, epautos.com. I'll take one more call before we cut Eric loose to the rest of his journalism day. Hi, who's this? Good morning.
Good morning. This is Francine.
Hi, Francine. Question or comment?
Well, yeah, you know, all of these things that we've been discussing this morning that you've been discussing are all little ways to make it more difficult to own a car. And it's just this incremental deterioration of the joy of owning a vehicle and being able to take yourself places that's in place right now, because eventually they're going to take away our cars completely if they can. And they know how people will completely lose their minds because we are so accustomed to having our own vehicles now. You know, the whole world is. And so they're doing this incrementally, like anything else they do, to convince us eventually to go along with it.
No, absolutely. The major part of that program has been directed at young people, you know, to make cars unappealing, unaffordable, an albatross around their neck. And sadly, that's why I think the percentage is something like 22% of people in the 16 to 23 age bracket don't even have a driver's license because it's just too much hassle for them.
Well, if you want to save individual transportation for everyone, help the young people understand why, no, you want this. You really do want this freedom to do this. And find a way to make it happen, okay? Hey, Eric, before we take off, you always do reviews. Give me a quick thumbnail, and then we'll tell people to go read the review. But the 2024 Hyundai Venue. Now, is that it looks like a pretty big crossover SUV, is it? Or what is it?
It's actually really small, but the thing that's important, I think, is that it's got a small price. It is, I think, the only new vehicle that you can still buy with a sticker price under $20,000.
No kidding.
And it's certainly the only crossover that you can buy with a sticker price under $20,000. And I was very favorably impressed by it. You know, it's an appliance, but it's a fine little appliance. My girlfriend has an older Toyota RAV4. It's very similar to that.
Okay.
And unlike the new RAV, which has gotten really big and really expensive, this thing's like $20,000 and less than $20,000 to start and loaded with a digital dashboard, heated seats, nice stereo. It's like $23,000. It's a really good little vehicle.
Boy, that's considered a bargain these days after the last few years of Bidenflation and so much more.
Yep.
Eric, great talk. Thank you very much. We'll see you next Wednesday. As always, epautos.com. Please support and read the article. You'll really stay informed on what is going on here. And remember, Eric, be a smart driver. Smart.
I'll do my worst. Thank you, Bill.
All right. Talk to you next week, 7 after 7. And we'll catch up on Town Hall News in just a moment. And more of your calls coming up.